In San Diego this weekend, legal experts are gathering. Many are members of the Innocence Project, a group that advocates the use of genetic testing to exonerate the wrongly convicted. This weekend, they have something to celebrate, a milestone that passed largely unnoticed in the wider world. Last month in Indiana, the 100th convict to be exonerated by DNA evidence walked free. Michael Smith has been an advisor to the Justice Department on DNA issues. He's a law professor at the University of Wisconsin.
Many of us thought at the beginning of this that the pool of cases in which DNA and exonerations would be possible was real, not small, but finite, and that it would be exhausted before too terribly long. And the reason, I think, is that we thought that DNA evidence, that is physical evidence, which could be tested, would simply not be available in very many cases. But it turns out to be available in a lot.
The numbers show that of these 100 people now exonerated, only three were convicted after 1993, which seems to indicate that DNA evidence now is clearing or eliminating a number of suspects before conviction.
I think that's right. I think the forensic lab directors will tell you that. In Virginia, for example, if I remember this rightly, about one in three of the suspect samples sent in for matching to the DNA database, the suspect turns out to be exonerated before the investigation proceeds further. Now, I don't know what that means because we don't know whether they would have been exonerated in investigation anyway. But it is important to see the utility to investigators of eliminating suspects that they're taking seriously. As soon as possible. It permits them to focus on the real suspects.
I wonder, looking forward, when you think about how DNA evidence might evolve in its use, what do you see?
Well, I see the shape of the future a little bit unclear. The problem that strikes me as coming, and coming in a big way, is that because we're constructing the databases that are used and make useful the collection and identification of DNA found at crime scenes, we're constructing them from people who are in prison and in some states from people who are arrested. What this is doing, of course, is creating a DNA database which is heavily skewed towards racial minorities so that the chances for the lifetime chances of a black male in America being imprisoned are something in the range of 30%. A white male, somewhere in the range of 5%. Now, we'd be foolish, wouldn't we, to think that white males don't commit a lot of nasty crimes. So that's a problem. What solution would there be to that? Well, I suspect that in time, the political system will have to take much more seriously the question, how inclusive should these databases be? Because we could, after all, have a near universal DNA database.
Well, there have been a number of calls for that, basically get DNA from everyone, put it in a database. Do you support that?
Well, I'm increasingly thinking that it's a better solution than the one that we're pursuing at the moment. When you say to yourself, well, I wonder why it wouldn't be better to have the DNA fingerprint, just the 13 STRs, not the whole genome, not the medical relevant stuff, but just the identification stuff available.
Michael Smith, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Michael Smith is a former member of the National Commission on the Future of DNA Evidence with the Justice Department. He teaches law at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.